Hi, everyone. It's a Baseball America podcast. Along with Matt Eddy, I am John Manuel. Welcome to the Thursday edition of the Prospect Handbook podcast. The last few weeks, it's been me and J.J. Cooper, but J.J.'s on assignment down in Florida. If I can get a hold of him, as we record this Thursday afternoon, I intend to try to get a hold of him and stitch that together and do a quick podcast interview with J.J. toward the end of this podcast. But Matt and I, we're going to talk BA's top 20 rookies. We're going to talk about we're going to give you our hot takes on Adam LaRoche and that unique situation with the White Sox. We might even talk some major league managers and how that profile is changing in the big leagues. But I want to focus the prospect portion of the podcast this week on the pro side. And we are, as always, brought to you by SeatGeek. And we will talk a little bit more about SeatGeek later on. We really love having SeatGeek aboard, especially at this time of year with March Madness, the NBA playoffs approaching. And, of course, the Major League Baseball season approaching and spring training underway. Great time of year to download the SeatGeek app. But, Matt, let's start off briefly with, like, this week's big news in the major leagues. And it really is unprecedented to have the big news in the major leagues be about a 14-year-old. Mm-hmm. And it's not even Bryce Harper on the cover of Sports Illustrated when he was 16. It's Adam LaRoche and a guy who grew up, son of a big leaguer, who grew up around major league clubhouses, trying to do the same thing with his own son, and according to all the reports, walking away from the Chicago White Sox, although LaRoche has not publicly spoken on this, to our knowledge, not that I've seen, to confirm this, but to all accounts, that he walked away from the Chicago White Sox because team president Kenny Williams, the former GM, asked that he not have his son Drake around in the clubhouse every day. Now, Kenny Williams never said, "I hate the Drake," to his credit, but he did seem to hate the fact that the Drake was around the clubhouse all year. Do you think this would be happening at all if the White Sox hadn't laid a giant egg last year and been, if they weren't last in the league, they were close to last in batting, runs, on base, slugging. It was a terrible offensive performance by the White Sox last year. Mm-hmm. Adam LaRoche was one of the contributors to it. Do you think this would be happening if the White Sox had been even mediocre last season?
Yeah, the cynical side of me asked that same question. Like, what if this was Chris Sale or Jose Abreu's kid? You know, an established good player coming off a good year.
Great point on Abreu, because you also have the cross-cultural thing. it would be, I think, perceived very differently if it were a different player.
Yeah, well, how about you?
I mean, to me, I think obviously you're going to give him a little bit different rope. I would think a little bit more rope to a guy who grew up in big league clubhouses, just like Adam LaRoche did. His dad, Dave, was a big league pitcher. I mean, he probably doesn't see this as anything other than normal. There certainly seems to also be a lot of track record of Adam LaRoche having his son with him in the clubhouse pretty much start to finish. We're both dads. I have to say, I wouldn't want my son to be here every day. And our jobs aren't as monotonous as baseball jobs. Maybe he needs that to keep the game from being so monotonous. Because I came to your cubicle when we saw the news about LaRoche before the news about Drake, and my first note to you was like, aha, another 36-year-old retiring.
That's right.
Another guy who doesn't want to put up with the grind. To me, it was more anecdotal evidence that the game is cleaner, because I just think it's harder to be a good big leaguer at age 35 than it was in the pre-Mitchell Report era. I do think that's part of it. I still think that's part of it. The game is hard. The pitchers are so good. They all throw the snot out of the ball. It's harder to hit, and you don't have much help anymore if you're 35, 36 years old. Maybe he felt that this is what made it easier, because certainly 634 OPS last year didn't make it easier for LaRoche, but I guess the other question is, do you think it's reasonable that Kenny Williams, even though he's not the GM or the manager, and according to Ken Rosenthal and Jeff Passan, we've done a lot of reporting on this today for Fox Sports and Yahoo Sports, respectively. Both guys seem to be reporting that Rick Hahn, the GM, and Robin Ventura had both signed off on this, the manager. Mm-hmm. Do you think Kenny Williams is within his... I guess obviously he's within his right to do it. He's the team president. But do you think he should have done this? Or do you think this is a smart move on his part?
Well, it's hard to say. given the last two seasons the White Sox have had at the major league level, doing something to shake them up could be beneficial. You know,
I agree.
More focus on preparation, less goofing around, less interfering with the work other players are trying to do, even though the players publicly say that it was not a distraction having Drake around.
There's no win for any player to come out and say, yeah, I didn't like having the 14-year-old around, you know?
That too.
There's no win. But could I see Carlos Rodon?
And when does he go to school?
That's a great question. Does he have a private school teacher? But could you see Avisail Garcia, you know, being like, you know, I don't like having this guy around. I don't like there being a kid around.
Right.
And I also am not a truly established big leaguer. I haven't had success. I don't know how to articulate this in English either. And I don't want to say the wrong thing.
Right.
Could you see that? Or could you see
it? And did a teammate or a coach
right
trigger
spur this?
Exactly.
Right. So, but it also seems, it's the way that Will Lingo put it to me this morning, and George Shelton, our ad executive, George said, hey, you know, my wife was asking me about this morning. So it's on the Today Show.
Wow.
So this is going to be the subject that people talk about with baseball.
Like the time Daniel Murphy took paternity leave.
Yeah.
Like last year or 2 years ago.
Yeah. Or the time that, or like this, the earlier this spring with all the stuff with Bryce Harper that we talked about on last week's podcast. It feels like it has to be a controversy now, and almost like news of the weird for baseball to get in the national consciousness. It's a little frustrating outside of the baseball talk. You know, basketball certainly seems like it has more currency, not just this time of year, more cultural currency in the general media and the general public. Baseball fans, I think, there are more hardcore baseball fans than there are hardcore, I think, NBA fans. I think the hardcore baseball fans are more all in than hardcore NBA fans. But they're a lot more casual fans of other sports, I feel like, than of baseball. And this is an example where this is what it takes for baseball to bleed over into the Today Show or national media like that. Because
if only there were a congressional hearing about this.
Exactly. That would make it even more delectable. It's definitely a weird story, though. And now here's the other question. Somewhere in the Oakland A's camp is Rangel Ravelo going, if only they hadn't traded me, I could get that in right there.
Well, that's a good question. Like, what do you do from a personnel standpoint for the White Sox? I might be inclined to put Frazier at first and DH Abreu, play Lowry at third, but then you open up that second base wound again from last year.
Right. It's a wound. But
Lowry doesn't really solve the defensive part of it, I don't think. I don't expect him to, but maybe he will.
He doesn't seem like he does. There's not another obvious DH really on the roster.
I think Garcia is who they're talking about because he's having a good spring, you know, through 2 weeks.
Avisail?
Yeah, Avisail Garcia.
So does that mean Jerry Sands or J.B. Shuck in right fielder? I guess they did sign Austin Jackson.
Right.
So I suppose that Austin Jackson, actually, when you're really looking at it, he's probably the guy who benefits the most from this. I did the White Sox top 30 2 years ago. You did it this year. There's no internal answer, is there? Exactly.
Jason Coates.
You know what? Jason Coates is actually an interesting option. This is the best thing ever to happen to Jason Coates' pro career.
He says the 2012 cape.
I will say that Jason Coates is a little sneaky little possibility.
Yeah.
Not on the 40-man. It gives him a chance to get on the 40-man, doesn't it?
Well, no, eventually,
he's on the 40-man.
No, he's not.
He is. No, he's a non-roster invitee.
Yeah, I would expect him to be up this year. He was at Charlotte most of last year.
And productive. Skipped over AA. You know, that's an intriguing possibility.
Not that we weren't intrigued by J.B. Shuck.
Exactly. I believe J.B. Shuck once appeared as your best rookie in the handbook for the Astros 1 year when I did them. Because I don't know why. But he did have one decent year, I suppose, for the Angels. But J.B. Shuck seems like he's going to be a guy who's going to be around when he's 32. We're going to be like, wait, J.B. Shuck still hang around the big league? So now J.B. Shuck never appeared in our top 20 rookies in the preseason, but he is going to allow us to segue. I don't think there's a White Sox guy who we considered for this year's top 20 rookies, Matt. But
they traded Trace Thompson, if he was still eligible for the award.
And I think last year we considered Micah Johnson. Did we rank Micah Johnson last year? We did not. No, we did. We ranked Carlos Rodon last year
yeah.
at the start. Now, usually you shepherd our top 20 rookies through. This year you weren't available to do that. And we had a different kind of meeting, and we wound up kind of with a different kind of list, Matt, than we usually wind up with. And, you know, you can find all this at baseballamerica.com. And if you've noticed, got a little web refresh that happened this week. Drop-downs, the return for Baseball America's website. We used to be crazy crazy drop-down heavy. Then we eliminated drop-downs. Now we're back to drop-down. So let us know if you have feedback. John Manuel at baseballamerica.com. Obviously, you can tweet at me, at John Manuel BA. He's at Matt Eddie BA. Matt, this year's top 20 rookie list really focused more on talent than opportunity. I think that really the person who sums that up the most for me is J.P. Crawford. I mean, I know he has double-A time and good double-A time. Hasn't played in triple-A. He's pretty young. I was surprised at how far he wound up being on our list. Who else jumped out to you just about this top 20 list? And what'd you think of the Japanese font on the cover for Kenta Maeda?
I think, you know, with any sort of ranking, you know, I think our first focus is usually omissions. Snubs.
Right.
Who got snubbed?
That's right. Our worst product, maybe you can still see, we've left it up on the whiteboard here. We've got a lot of names, and Josh Norris's script up here as he was keeping notes for us. A lot of bad nicknames up there, too, that he tried to write.
Yeah, the standouts for me, like a team, the Phillies and Braves are going to have a lot of opportunity for rookies.
Yep.
So you look at some of the Major League-ready guys, especially on the Braves. I looked at Aaron Blair and Malik Smith. We can start with these guys and then circle back to your
question. No, that's a good idea.
Question, but
both Braves, because on my personal top 20 rookies list, well, this is what I wrote, and then I had Smith and Blair, as you can see, right at the top of guys who did not make the list, as well as former Brave Jose Peraza. The Reds, I think, are another team that fits into that. They're going to have a lot of rookie opportunity. I'm not sure they'll have as many as they had last year on the pitching side, but Jose Peraza, I felt, was an omission, a snub, as it were, a perfect March Madness term. Smith and Blair, though, both guys you had in the Southern League top 20 last year. Which of those guys do you think is more ready to contribute in 2016, irrespective of what their opportunity looks like at this moment?
I would say Blair. It's the second half in AAA. You know, he's a finished product. I don't think he's ever going to be more effective than he is now.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
He's pretty effective. You know, he's a ground ball oriented pitcher with good control, but without outstanding individual pitches.
His path to getting better really would be going from good control and okay command to great control and good command, being like a real command oriented, almost kind of like a best case scenario, kind of like a Dan Heron type, right?
Yeah.
I'm not sure he has that kind of ceiling.
Right.
But approximating that kind of ceiling, a 200 inning number 3/4 starter kind of guy.
Yeah, and who knows where the Braves are lining up behind Tehran this year. So Blair will be up pretty soon, I'd imagine.
Because they also have Manny Benuelos, who's kind of similar, still rookie eligible. I think I actually considered ranking Benuelos as well in that top 20. And I think the fact that the Braves have so many pitching options that they have to sift through this year, guys who aren't rookie eligible anymore, like Matt Whistler, Mike Fulton-Evitz, I think those two guys actually contributed. If memory serves, I'm trying to go back to the staff meeting. I think that was a reason why those guys did not get traction in our meeting, why Aaron Blair and Benuelos didn't get any traction. Blair got a race, but Blair was up here somewhere. And then you mentioned, Malik Smith. Another guy where if Ender Inciarte hadn't been part of that package,
yeah,
I would think that Smith would have had a pretty clear path to playing time.
At some point, yeah, until they trade Inciarte, I guess, but
right,
it'd be odd to have a lineup with both Smith and Inciarte in there.
It would be.
I think, you know, two left-handed hitting, speed-oriented players.
And Bourne,
yeah.
And this year with
Oliveira would probably be the other outfielder.
That's the guy we did rank. We did rank Hector Oliveira. And a tough guy to rank. A tough guy to know what to do with, frankly. We wound up ranking him. Where did we wound up ranking him? Why did I navigate away from that page? 11th. And I think, you know, Hector Olivera is one of the tougher guys to figure here. Other Cuban hitters, have, with his track record and tools, have adjusted a little bit quicker to pro ball, to the big leagues. The length in his swing and the injuries that he had last year seem to have inhibited him from... They seem to have made his learning curve a little bit longer. I feel like we'll know about Hector Olivera basically within the next month. Like in April, we'll know whether he's... whether we were right or wrong to rank him in the top 20. Do you feel like the Braves are going to give him that much more time, considering that the you know, the Dodgers paid half of his contract, the $28 million bonus, was all Dodger paid?
Yeah, I expect him to be a fixture for most of the year, unless he's so bad they have to send him down. For
if they send him the boot early,
breather.
that would be a bad sign for Hector Olivera. So you like this ranking, Olivera, where we ranked him? 11 is where he wound up.
It's tough to say. I mean, I do like the international professional guys on these sorts of lists where it's more short-term focused.
Right.
So, yeah, I think it's defensible.
And that's a great way to put it. It's a short-term focus.
Maeda as well. We don't expect him to be great for a long time, but we expect him to be pretty good in the short term.
And if you look between Seager, Buxton, Steven Matz, Trey Turner, Orlando Arcia, J.P. Yeah. Crawford, Berrios, Snell, Reed, all those guys have been on the cover of the magazine in the last 6 months. So Maeda was like the only guy in the top 10 or top 11, counting Olivera from last spring, who hadn't been on the cover of BA lately.
Yeah, we started with Crawford, and I do like him a lot. I like that ranking. You know, he reminds me, I shared this with you last week, and I'm not sure if you agreed with me or not, but he reminds me somewhat of where Francisco Lindor was last year.
Right.
As a reliable fielder with a good plate control.
Yeah, as far as the those parts of the profile were similar. I think we kind of thought more of Lindor's glove than we do of Crawford's, and a little bit less of his bat. And then Lindor had this really good big league season where the power showed more than he'd shown in the minor leagues. Boy, if Crawford kind of improves on his perceived weakness, where his defense is better than we thought and the bat just lives up to expectations, he's going to be a special player. Because his bat, I don't think I noticed that was one of the better 250 hitting seasons for a 20-year-old in Double A. And he controlled the strike zone so much. And I guess the thing that gives you confidence about him is not just that he controls the strike zone, but that he makes impact when he hits it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. From an offensive standpoint, yeah. He's yeah, I mean, Seager's obviously the best among rookie shortstops. But, yeah, Crawford and Arcia, that's another nice group just like we had this year with Correa and Addison Russell.
Do we have other shortstops on this list?
In other words, if you're playing in a dynasty league, don't overpay for a hot young shortstop because there's more on the way.
Yeah, if you don't get Seager, you could get Turner. If you don't get Turner, you can get Arcia. If you don't get Arcia, you could get Crawford. And honestly, after Seager, I can see the other three guys being in any order, ceiling-wise. And if one of those guys outpaced Corey Seager ceiling-wise, it's not like there's a chasm. You know, J.P. Crawford has a lot of similarities to Corey Seager. He's never quite done it in the minor leagues the way that Seager has, which gives us so much confidence in Corey Seager. And I like Seager's swing better. The scouts I've talked to have all said that the low-maintenance swing and the strength that he has in his swing, combined with plate discipline, bat speed, he really doesn't have... He checks every box, basically, that you want offensively, you know. He has had some injury issues already this spring, so that might make things more difficult for him. One thing that you pointed out, Matt, is some of our past lists. And last year, obviously, it was an all-time rookie class. Outside of Steven Souza, who I will take full blame for, really, Steven Souza and the Cubans, Olivera and Castillo, and Tomas, those are kind of our bigger misses on that list. And then the fact that we were a little bit light on Lindor. In terms of names, we got most of the names. At the back, I guess we didn't have Conforto, we didn't have Schwarber. We didn't think those 2014 draft guys would rise so quickly.
No.
That was unexpected.
And it's a great group, yeah. Throw in Rodon in there.
This is maybe a little bit unexpected. Jorge Soler, Jock Peterson, that we had at 2 and 3 last year. We had Bryant going in. Bryant won it. Which of those guys, Soler and Peterson, after 1 year, which one do you feel better about going forward? Because Jock Peterson certainly showed some pretty ridiculous ceiling. Drew a ton of walks. hit a lot of home runs, hit a lot of long home runs in the home run derby. He saw the snap.
Yeah.
I mean, Soler has ridiculous raw power. I don't know that you can say that Soler has more raw power than Peterson. And Peterson's playing center field, but the swing and miss for Jock Peterson in the second half was pretty disturbing.
Yeah, he might be a little miscast as a leadoff guy. I know the on-base percentage is great. I might like to see him a little lower in the lineup, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would take Peterson. You have some extra dimensions of the defense and the speed.
Right, I agree. And a little bit more value as a center fielder. His first half, even with all the strikeouts, was pretty great. Obviously proved unsustainable, but it does feel like that's something that he should be able to make some adjustments to. He doesn't have to swing out of his shoes to impact the baseball. So you'd like to see a little bit more bat control and see if he traded off a little bit. I'm still high on Soler, but I mean, the Cubs have such outfield depth right now.
Yeah.
you know, it's hard to see what exactly he's going to do. Yeah, our other miss in that group, Steven Souza, do you like his chances of improving? He was almost like a foreign impact rookie with his age, at his advanced age. He seems like he may have missed his big shot in Tampa.
Yeah, I don't have any strong opinion on him. What do you think? Like, I'm
a Souza guy. I was one of the drivers of him being that high. I think he's athletic enough to figure it out. I don't know. We might have read a little bit too much into the small sample size of that 90-game monster AAA season in 2014. That might have swayed me too much.
MVP.
Yeah. Oh, and just a dominant year.
Yeah, we have Addison Russell on this list toward the end, but Carlos Correa absent. We had no idea how to process that broken leg.
Broken leg, had never played above high A.
Yeah.
I do remember J.J. Cooper being very high on him and hearing great reports about his athleticism and speed coming back when he was coming back to spring training camp. But let's also acknowledge, we do this top 20 rookies list in early March. So it's before spring training even really starts. So it's a little bit challenging. Our 2014 list, Matt, a couple interesting things about that one that I also want to touch on. First off, Archie Bradley, still eligible. who else is still eligible on that list? Jameson Taillon, still eligible. and then a couple of these guys. You know, Xander Bogaerts was one for us, Tanaka two, Jose Abreu three. Abreu wound up being, I believe, our rookie of the year that year.
Tanaka and Abreu, I think, gave me a lot of what proved to be misplaced confidence in the international players. On the 2015 list, we have all those Cuban players bunched up toward the top.
Yeah.
Ruzne Castillo and Oliveira.
Right.
I think that was a mistake.
I think that's fair. that's fair. You know, and Kevin Gausman here at seven, I kind of thought Kevin Gausman would have figured it out by now. And if he doesn't, I think it's going to be very hard for the Orioles to contend this year. They really need Kevin Gausman to be good.
Well, the Orioles, yeah.
Lurking down at 17 that year and 12 the next year, Noah Syndergaard. We always had a lot of faith in. I feel like we were higher on Syndergaard going into 14 than we were going into 15.
Yeah, you know? And I think that's explained why. Because his ERA was not good at Vegas. I think that certainly gave some people pause.
And the breaking ball still was inconsistent in high A. It seemed like it was inconsistent in AAA as well. But,
no questions anymore.
Exactly. He's answered that question. The 2013 rookie list, Matt.
This is the one I always remember because we were all in on Profar and Dylan Bundy and Oscar Tavares.
Moment of silence. And, you know, but yeah, we were all in on those guys. Bruce Rondon, we thought. Tyler Skaggs still hasn't come through. Certainly has opportunity this year. Mike Olt just picked up today on what, minor league waivers by like his third team in the last couple months.
Yeah.
He's just on that wash. Chris Archer all the way down at 17.
Yeah. Guy we underrated pretty clearly.
Yeah, and it was addressed very well recently in JJ's story about command and control and Cliff Lee, how Cliff Lee's retirement spurred this conversation for JJ. Like, he just didn't realize how wild Cliff Lee had been as an amateur and early in his big league career.
Yeah.
And wound up becoming one of the premier command guys of his generation. And kind of what were the traits that allowed him to do that, and who are pitchers who face these similar questions. And Chris Archer was one of them. I remember very distinctly going on must have been Sirius XM radio with Jim Bowden and raving about seeing Chris Archer here with the Pan Am Games team that went to the Dominican Republic in 2010. A team that also featured, if memory serves, I think Eric Hosmer might have been on that team. Maybe not. I know Mike Trout was on that team. I know Chris Archer was on that team. I know Brett Jackson was on that team. Because I interviewed Brett Jackson at that practice the day that Cal announced they were going to cut their baseball program. Which, of course, they didn't. They did for like 6 months. They were on their deathbed and then they resuscitated the program. But, yeah, seeing Chris Archer pitch in person should have made me higher on him because his delivery was just so easy. There were no red flags. And the athleticism and the aptitude are the two things that kind of carried him to more success. It's the Baseball America podcast with John and Matt. I need to remind everybody that we are sponsored by SeatGeek. And again, we want to thank SeatGeek for their sponsorship of the Baseball America podcast. We want to ask if you've ever been frustrated trying to buy tickets online. Most sites make it complicated and then try to sneak in huge fees at checkout. That's why you need to try SeatGeek. They've made it easier than ever to buy and sell tickets for sports and for concerts. In fact, this weekend, based here in Durham, over in Raleigh, the NCAA tournament, basketball, first and second round at the PNC Arena. I already hit SeatGeek today looking for tickets, and I love the way that SeatGeek color codes it so that the $1,000 tickets are in red and the $120 tickets, the good buys, are in green. SeatGeek pulls all the tickets available on other sites into one place. You save time, you never miss a deal, and you can set alerts for upcoming games. SeatGeek will let you know if the ticket prices fall. Even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value, so you can immediately find underpriced seats. Before you buy, you can use SeatGeek's detailed maps to see the view from your seat. Best of all, SeatGeek's always honest and upfront about the price. Unlike StubHub, SeatGeek shows you the full ticket price from start to finish and never surprises you with huge fees at checkout. So remember, Baseball America podcast listeners can get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get that $20 rebate on tickets, download the free SeatGeek app on iTunes or wherever you get your app for your smartphone. Go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Enter promo code BA20, that's BA20, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code BA20 today. And we thank SeatGeek for their sponsorship of the Baseball America podcast. Matt, let's just go right back to our preseason top 20 rookies and some of the guys who missed in our list, guys whose kiss should have been on our list. I am curious what you thought of the back of the list where we snuck on Tyler Glasnow and Lucas Giolito. Those are two guys who could be kind of like Lindor was last year, where you don't see a clear path to where they're going to be on there, but if they get to the big leagues, you could see them both being very successful. Could you not?
Oh, sure, yeah. And, you know, the sort of the hard-throwing young starting pitcher never goes out of style. Teams need, what, on average 8 or 9 starting pitchers to get through a season?
Oh, yeah, at least these days.
And when you can throw in somebody in a pennant race, I mean, both these teams figure to be competitive.
You mentioned the Braves as a team that's going to have a lot of opportunity, the Phillies as a team that's going to have a lot of opportunity. Was there a Phillies player or two that you would have had on your personal top 20 or that you would have argued us to include?
I would have thought about Nick Williams.
He was discussed.
How about you?
Nick Williams was discussed. Actually, it was kind of like an ex-Ranger versus current Ranger showdown between him and Mazzara.
Yeah, it could be interesting because he's the sort of player who could get off to a fast start and really build a great season line based on his early start.
Right, and counting numbers.
I think he'll have an adjustment period, but
we talked about Max Kepler.
Yeah.
Similar genre of player. I'm not sure just how much opportunity Kepler would have. Mazzara, I like having Mazzara on the list from a talent standpoint. I don't know that he has opportunity with the, especially with Ian Desmond signing in Texas. I didn't see Mazzara from an opportunity standpoint. I see him, if it were flipped and he were in Philadelphia, Mazzara might be in my top 5 for this list. Because I do think he has advanced hitting ability. That advanced hitting ability is what got him on our list this high.
Did you guys talk about any Brewers in addition to Arcia?
You know, Lopez is the back of the list at 16. We did not talk about other Brewers that I can recall.
Brett Phillips, maybe?
You know, he didn't come up. Actually, I think Ben Badler brought him up. If you buy the prospect handbook, you know Ben is very high on Brett Phillips, number 11 on his personal top 50. Wound up more in the 60 range in the top 100. So I think Ben brought up Brett Phillips. Again, for me, he needs another year. I would say a full year in the minor leagues before I thought he would be ready. Not just ready, but also like, yeah, I know they're rebuilding, but felt like they, between Domingo Santana, Ryan Braun, and who are they playing in center field? I forget who. Kirk Neuenheis. There's one other outfielder. Reimer Liriano, Keon Broxton. These are all guys that they're going to sift through this year. They don't want to be good. So why bring up Brett Phillips? But now you're making the Brett Phillips point. I'm making it for you, basically. Am I not?
Yeah, I don't know how strongly I feel, because he was not all that great after he joined Biloxi.
Right.
Especially in terms of power. I think he had one home run at AA. I think he had a wrist injury, too. Mitigating circumstances.
Ramon Flores, that's the other outfielder. But these are all guys who make the case for Brett Phillips, really.
Don't forget Garen Cecchini, too. I don't know where he's going to play.
I'll forget about him. Oh, and Michael Reed. I like Michael Reed, actually. Michael Reed's kind of like a sneakier, deep pick.
Right-handed outfielder. Long-term, you got to think Phillips.
Oh, certainly.
And or Santana. But, yeah.
Long-term.
Reed is older, more experienced.
Long-term, Phillips over all the guys we just discussed. Short-term, I guess I wasn't satisfied that he was going to be a potential top 20 guy. Other guys who I had on my short list, Michael Givens of the Orioles. What's your take on Michael Givens?
He is really intriguing now that he can get left-handed batters out.
Yeah.
And I think it's just the Orioles' magic. I mean, all their low-slot righties for some reason.
Buck Showalter. I think Buck is really good at, A, putting those guys in the right situation. They get confident. He uses them consistently. I just think he's really good at using a bullpen.
No Andrew Triggs, though. He got claimed on waivers.
He gone.
O'Day, there's another low slot.
Oh, yeah, he's a submarine for sure.
On the Orioles, who am I thinking of?
No, he is. No, that's Darren O'Day for sure. But
they have another guy?
I would imagine that they do. I know that he's just maximized. I mean, like Brian Mattis was a total zero for them in their starting rotation. They've made him into a useful relief pitcher. Zach Britton did just transition from a starter to reliever to a dominant reliever. So Buck's done a nice job in general handling their pitchers, starting and relieving, and you know, getting them to the playoffs a couple times without a true ace in the rotation. You mentioned Aaron Blair. What'd you think of some of these other starting pitchers, the John Gray, Archie Bradley class of pitchers? And is there another pitcher, maybe even on this board, Sean Newcomb we mentioned. That's not a pitcher. That's Byung Ho Park. Jose De Leon, we wound up ranking. Julio Urias, we did not. Marco Gonzalez, we did not. Tim Cooney, any of those guys really strike your fancy?
You know, I think Gray has the raw pitches to succeed. You know, he's...
I agree.
It's been really a very... I don't know the word, stratified pro career for him. He's really good or really bad.
And he's really underwhelmed. When he's been bad, he's been really bad. He and Mark Appel are just so similar in that regard. And we did features on both players in the latest issue of Baseball America. Our correspondents, Jim Salisbury on Mark Appel and Jack Etkin on John Gray, detailed how both players really have kind of struggled to find their way as pros. There were a couple things in Jack's story about John Gray that really struck me. And it was Darren Holmes talking about how they've tried to clean up John Gray's delivery. Here's Holmes talking about it. He had a lot of moving parts. What we did was clean it up, put him in position where he lifts his leg, he's loading as he lifts, instead of lifting his leg and having to swing it back to load. So he simplified his gather over the rubber. That should help him both in his velocity, which he doesn't need any help with, but he has lost velocity from college to pro ball. And he's gone from a guy who was sitting 97 and touching 100 as a college starter to sitting 92, 93 and reaching 95, 96 as a pro. He no longer swings his leg lift back, so his weight is not on his heel. He's got a little bit better balance. He used to miss arm side a lot. So if you're a Rockies fan or you're just a fan and you're watching John Gray for signs in the Rockies big league rotation this year that he's going to have a good year, see how much he's missing arm side, especially arm side and up. If he's not doing that, then he's made the adjustments that the Rockies wanted him to make. And didn't you dig in the data last year and find that his slider was still quite an effective pitch for him at the big league level?
Yeah, swings and misses at a well above average rate.
So I still like John Gray's potential
to
be a guy who pitches with 2+ pitches and a show-me changeup and could be an effective rookie starter even in that ballpark.
Yeah, and I think that's the environment is always the big question you have with any. But maybe he makes more than half of his starts in the other parks.
That would be helpful for his overall numbers. I will say it would be really hard for me to see us ever ranking a Rockies pitcher in the top 20 rookies just because of the environment. How about Trevor Story? We discussed him.
Yeah.
Are you bullish on Trevor Story or not so much? He's a tough one.
Yeah. Who's a major leaguer who he reminds you of? Major league shortstop.
Oh, that's a good question.
Brandon Wood?
That comp gives me pause. Yeah, he kind of is in that same family of players, isn't he? Yeah. Swing and miss shortstop who has juice.
So, I don't know.
I mean, Jose Hernandez, who's not in the big leagues anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, truly.
Yeah, I mean, Jose Hernandez's strikeout rate was seen as gigantic, but it's probably, I don't know, like 18% or something, like where now it's 33.
Jose Hernandez, who last year was in 2006, so not exactly a contemporary comp either. But that was a guy who played a lot of positions and played shortstop.
Who's the most striking outest shortstop right now?
Oh, that would be a play index question.
I guess Ian Desmond, if you want to be optimistic.
And see, he has some approximations to Desmond, but mostly it's the strikeouts and the power.
Mm-hmm.
He's not nearly as physical or athletic to me as Ian Desmond. He's athletic. He's not as physical. Offensive, maybe he could be a Brian Dozier type if you wound up playing more second base.
Second base, yeah.
You know, low average power,
right.
Strikeouts, that kind of guy. His opportunity will come at shortstop for the Rockies. If he makes the Rockies and if he becomes one of our top 20 rookies by the end of the year, it's going to be at shortstop because of Jose Reyes-ness, his offseason problems, his on-the-field issues the last couple of years, his decline. He just has that's a guy who's really declined over the last three seasons pretty significantly. Anyone else on this list, though, who struck your fancy?
I mean,
injured pitchers like Kyle Zimmer or Dylan Bundy, either of those guys you like?
Where's Cody Reed on this list? He's up there.
He's right there, and that was when I could not believe that J.J. Cooper was all about Cody Reed. That's the Red most likely to break through this year. He's having a great spring.
I think so. I as tough as it's going to be to unseat Kavius Sampson in the rotation. No, really. I mean, the Reds have what? They have Iglesias, they have De Sclafani, and I think they signed Alfredo Simon.
Did they really? I missed that.
But aside from those three, who am I forgetting?
No, they have Bailey, but he'll not be back until...
I don't know if Lorenzen's in the rotation or in the bullpen, plus he's injured now.
De Sclafani, Iglesias, Lamb, Moscot, Finnegan.
Yeah, see, I'd like Cody Reed a lot in light of this.
He's better than all those jokers.
And Stevenson, we'll see. I like him.
Yeah, I don't see a whole lot of competition for the Reds. I mean, the more I'm looking at it, the more I'm thinking, why didn't we rank Cody Reed?
I wasn't here pounding the table.
That's it. That's why we miss it. Hey, how about former Villanova right-hander Kyle McMine? I like that name. He's in camp for them.
Nice.
Rule 5 lefty Chris O'Grady.
Okay.
Kivas Sampson, Jonathan Sanchez, former Coastal Plain League top 10 prospect Lane Sampson out of South Dakota State. I love reading rosters and having things click in my head like that. Yeah, it's a scene, man. Whose tank are you more on here, Matt? I gotta admit, I'm not too impressed by the Reds' tank so far.
I do like that they're building with pitchers, though. I like Reed and Stevenson and Finnegan could be interesting.
Even Lamb to an extent.
To an extent. Amir Garrett. I mean, I think the Reds have a lot of pitching pieces that could pan out. I mean, sort of the Braves.
Which veteran Red, besides with Votto off the table because his contract's so high, and Brandon Phillips because he's already rejected all the other trades, which Red big leaguer would you try to, would you try to pick off the carcass of the Reds if you were a contender? Who would you try to go out and get? Would it be Jay Bruce or... would it be Zach Cozart or one of those?
I was going to say Cozart because he is a rare defender. I think there's more hitters like Bruce than there are shortstops like Cozart, even though he can't hit really at all.
Right. But now he can play shortstop on a playoff team. Yeah. He's shown that.
And I think they're going with Suarez at third, right? More so than shortstop?
Eugenio Suarez. Yes, I believe that's correct.
But yeah, Bruce would also be a good one. He's going to get paid more because he hits home runs. So if you're budget conscious, I would say Cozart.
Yeah, that is just not a good-looking big league ball club. And they know it, obviously.
Scott Schebler.
Chance to rake in their outfield. Maybe we should have listed him. We did discuss Jesse Winker. He's not up here. We probably should have brought up Schebler.
He's a sneaky 20 home run candidate this year. Yeah. Even though 20 home runs is actually pretty impressive now. Let's say 15.
You know who Schebler kind of overall, I don't think he's quite as good as this, but overall he's kind of got some Corey Dickerson in him, doesn't he? Yeah. Left fielder, a little under the radar, wasn't a high draft, JUCO guy.
Yeah.
They check a lot of the same boxes. I think Schebler's more power over hit, mm-hmm. and Dickerson was hit over power. I think Schebler probably is a little bit better defender, but those are mm-hmm. two, and yeah, there's precedent.
Schebler has a little sneaky speed, too.
He's not a bad athlete. Yeah. Right, he's not a bad athlete. I agree. And then, Matt, I wanted to wrap up by did this story go live, your manager story?
Yeah, we did it today.
The baseballist?
Right.
So why don't you sum up for people a little bit what this story's about?
Yeah, in light of some of the historic managerial talent leaving the game in recent years, Bobby Cox and Tony La Russa, yeah, Joe Torre, you might have heard of these guys.
Yeah, basically three guys who were in the Hall of Fame in Cox, La Russa, and Torre. And then two guys, as you pointed out, who were managerial fixtures for basically 30 or, I mean, like for Jim Leland from 1986 through 2014. This guy was a big league manager with maybe 1 or 2 years in between where he wasn't a manager. So what is that, close to 30 years?
Yeah.
And Pinella.
Had been managing since the late 80s?
Yeah, had been in the big leagues basically since 1969. I mean, as a player or right. coach or manager. So that's a long time to be around the game.
Yeah, I think had one of Lou's Mariners teams broken through, I think we would view him differently. But
he broke through to win 116 games, but the playoff success that he got with a 90-win team in Cincinnati eluded him with all those great players in Seattle.
Yeah, so I think what I did is I lined it up with the old Bill James Hall of Fame monitor. It's a weighted scoring system. 8 points for a World Series victory, et cetera, et cetera. And as it turns out, Leland and Pinella fall just short of qualifying under that system.
That's fascinating.
Though.
Which is what we kind of, just like historic, I would just think of both of them as just shy.
Yeah. You know? Whereas the other three sail way past the threshold, or just some of the best managers ever, literally. I mean, they're 3, 4, and 5 and wins all time.
I was about to say modern post, so 1961 on, expansion era. What you and I would call the common era of Major League Baseball. Is one of these three guys the number one manager of all time for you? And if so, who? Who is your best manager of that era?
Wow.
I think for me, you kind of have to give it to La Russa. And to me, it's grudging. But you have to give it to Tony La Russa. He changed the game, the way bullpens are handled. He was open to incorporating analytics. He may have done it grudgingly, but he did it. He won 3 World Series, right?
Yeah.
American League, National League. He won as a young manager. He won as an old manager. He won in the early 80s with speed. He won in the steroid era with the steroid team. That's the only taint on him to me, is Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think Tony La Russa, I don't know him personally. I'm not a fan of his persona. But I think Tony La Russa has the best resume of any of these guys, personally.
Yeah. And some of his Cardinals teams that were great, like the 04 and 05 teams,
right.
didn't win the World Series. But then he managed teams that were probably less talented than their opponents. 2 titles in 06 right. and 2011.
And was so consistent. I mean, those A's teams, to go to 3 straight
right.
playoffs and then 4 to 5 years only. They missed it in, I guess, 1991.
I think so, yeah.
But they went to the playoffs again in 92. And when they were beaten by Hershiser's Dodgers, that was one of the flukier World Series of all time, but a singular performance by Oral Hershiser in that postseason.
He was the Madison Bumgarner of his World
right,
Series.
Right, that's right. And then in 1990, they lost to this very unique Reds team with that killer bullpen. 92, they lost to a Blue Jays team that was going on a back-to-back World Series. His Cardinals teams lost to usually good teams in the playoffs, like they lost to the Diamondbacks, who won a World Series. They lost to the Red Sox in 2004 when everything was going the Red Sox way. I mean, his consistency is just mind-boggling. So for me, He's the best modern manager ever.
That's who I would pick as well, yes.
So can Bruce Bochy, who's number one on your active list, and I think is that's by acclamation, not just by the formula, can yeah. Bruce Bochy catch him with all the Padres years dragging him down?
No, I don't think so. But it is pretty remarkable because Bochy is pretty much the only active manager who's clearly a Hall of Fame path.
Yeah.
You know, Mike Scioscia could get there, I think. I think it would require a kind of reversal of fortune. You'd need to get back to his 2000s mojo with the Angels.
Yeah, I was surprised not to see him, too. I was surprised to see him behind Johnny B. Baker here.
According to the formula, yes.
I wonder if they had to be Dodgers teammates at one point. They had to be teammates on the 81 World Series team, maybe. Yep. I would imagine they were.
Yeah, but Dusty, you know, has the pennant with the 02 Giants. And he's, you know, seven playoff teams, successful with three different franchises, probably a fourth this year.
I was about to say, I think that this year kind of will be an important year for both those guys because the Angels, you know, had their, was 2014 in J.J. Cooper parlance a dead cat bounce for them when they won 98 games? Or, because they couldn't sustain it last year, they were off by 15 wins last year. I don't like the trajectory of the Angels. Excuse me. I think that, to me, Mike Scioscia's best comp is Mike Holmgren. You know, Mike Holmgren was the Packers' head coach, won a World Super Bowl in 96, lost in the Super Bowl in 97, and he still had Brett Favre in his prime. And because Holmgren got more control of the organization, control over the draft, control over personnel, all that stuff, he wound up squandering all those years of Brett Favre. And I think Mike Scioscia's done the same thing with the Angels. I think he has total control of the organization, and he's squandering the best years of Mike Trout. And it's a shame. So
it is. Well, you know, Mike Trout signed that extension with them. It kind of reminds you of like when David Wright signed with the Mets. Everybody kind of thought, the Mets will never be good again.
Yeah.
And then he was not a key part, but he was in the lineup for them last year.
Yep. No, I agree.
So, you know.
I was a little surprised at how low Buck Showalter was.
I know.
I thought that he would come out higher, but...
He doesn't have a lot of black ink.
He
does as you would put in player terms.
Right.
Never managed a World Series.
That's amazing to me that he's never gone to the World Series. I thought for sure he'd be ahead of Terry Francona because Terry Francona managed the Phillies to a whole lot of nothing.
Yeah.
And I guess he's made one playoff appearance with the Indians.
Yeah.
But they just seem like they've been on the door the last couple of years and not gone through that door. And last year, they were, frankly, a disappointment.
Yes.
So only one division title for Francona. That must have been, what, 05 Red Sox?
07, yeah.
07 Red Sox, okay. Mm-hmm. Is there any path to a Hall of Fame for Francona, you think? Two World Series titles is pretty loud.
It is, yeah. And his Indians teams are good. I guess depends on what he does with the Indians, who are pretty well positioned to be good, I would say.
It seems like they should be. I mean, they should be.
And then if you go further down the list.
Ned. Wow. Ned Yost over Joe Girardi. Hoochie mama, I did not expect that.
Just based on the point system. I mean, you get 8 points for the World Series, 5 for his pennant.
What does he get for getting fired in September?
I know, with the Brewers.
That wasn't part of the formula. What does he get for breaking cinder blocks with his bare hands? Did you see that the other day?
No.
All right, I'm going to let you watch this.
He's actually under 500 at both of the teams he's managed, too, which is interesting. But he has the best postseason record of any active manager. 7-10 winning percentage in the playoffs. That's 2014 and 2015.
Well, that's based all, of course, on Alcides Escobar's postseason prowess with the bat, as we saw. We were talking a little lineup optimization the other day, and we made sure to... Well, here's the picture. I don't have the video.
Is this real?
This is real. He broke a bunch of cinder blocks in camp, cutting his arm in the process. But, yeah, he is... I actually got to... I got to see Ned this year at the Gold Glove banquet. Actually rode the elevator with him and just chit-chatted with him for a while. And it was neat. He is just such an approachable, good guy. You can see how he could relate to players. But his managing, I mean, you can see why people made fun of him before they won the World Series, and probably still do make fun of him. He does some very... I'm not even sure how to put it.
Non-traditional.
Well, it's almost like too traditional. It's not traditional now, but it's traditional like 1970s managing.
But the same token, he manages his pitching staff like a...
Right.
Like a La Russa time, you know, to the second power or something.
You're right. You know, here's the video of him breaking concrete blocks that you have not seen.
Wow.
But he's a unique guy. I mean, he's just a different guy. There's a lot of strength in his hands. I just was surprised that he checked out ahead of Girardi. And then at number eight is a guy who I would say is the biggest challenger to Bruce Bochy for best manager right now, and that's Joe Maddon.
Right.
Why did he check out so low?
I mean, he has 5 playoff appearances, but 3 of them via the wild card. He has the 1 pennant. He doesn't have a lot of this is based on tenure, because you get 2 points for every season.
Okay.
So he's only 10 years in. I think check back with those 20 extra points in 10 years, and he'll be much higher.
I liked your best of the rest.
Mike Matheny is off to an amazing start. You know, say what you will about him or the talent he's given, but
he's
managed it very well.
And his early success seemed to beget a lot of copycats of players with very little experience as coaches who became managers. This crop includes Brad Ausmus, Robin Ventura, the aforementioned Robin Ventura. They're obviously Matt Williams.
Yes.
Asked and answered, counselor.
Craig Counsell?
Craig Counsell, right. That's right. I just sent him some prospect handbooks.
But who could not love Craig Counsell?
He and his right-hand man, Pat Murphy, my main man. And with his college coaching, College of Coaches is what they called it with the Cubs in the early 60s. He just has college coaches. Pat Murphy is his bench coach. And Derek Johnson, former Vanderbilt pitching coach, is his big league pitching coach now. What do you think of that crew? Of the players almost directly to managers.
Do you get the impression that front offices like that dynamic because they're closer in age to the players, so they can relate better? Like there's more of a generation gap now than maybe there used to be.
Huh?
Or maybe they're more receptive to data.
I think it's the latter. To me, that's my impression is that they're all those guys either played and if they had after their playing career. They at least had a little bit of experience like special assistant or scout or a special coach, that kind of stuff. And maybe they didn't run a lineup. I think that managing a bullpen and a lineup, it feels like lineups are determined more and more by front offices these days than managers. It's an organizational outlook to a lineup where the manager has to get in line with those analytics. And if they don't, either they're sent the boot or the general manager is in Jerry DePoto's case. So I think it's really that relatable openness to the new data and openness to the game the way it is right now.
Call out the Padres for hiring Andy Green, a guy who managed the minors.
Yeah.
And has some major league coaching experience, I believe.
Chip Hale, too. Both those guys.
Also a great source for us in the Southern League in years past.
Yeah, both those guys were Diamondbacks coaches, managers at AA and AAA, who were great. I always get the sense with both those guys that they respected what we did. They knew what we were looking for when we called about these kind of things. And they were good evaluators.
Yes.
I thought they were both good evaluators of players. But also, new to talk about makeup. That's our best window for our prospect reports into makeup is the league top 20s. Because you're talking to pitching coaches, you're talking to managers, hitting coaches. If you have time, you're talking to all those kind of guys in the league.
And you're not getting organization spin.
Exactly.
You're getting more of a unbiased opinion.
That's right. Especially if you catch up at the right time, and they're not on a bus. If they're home, they're in the clubhouse, or they're driving to the ballpark early in the morning. That's why I try to get my guys in the Florida State League. 11 o'clock in the morning, that's my sweet spot. 11 to 1. I try to call after they've had their morning workout, before they go to lunch, or right when they're going to lunch, usually in their car, usually commuting. I put way too much freaking thought into this stuff. But that's my window where I try to call guys, and I want to get them when they're in the car and they're alone. And then you get guys permission to speak freely, sir. And it's granted, and they speak freely. And that's where you get your best read on makeup, in my mind. Top 30 time, it's just harder, yes. You know? It's just harder. It's harder for pro scouts to read makeup of players who are not in their organization. And the off season, it's just harder to get a read from the scouting director, farm director, assistant GMs, these kind of guys. They're not going to generally share that kind of information. So I always thought that those two guys, among others, were really great sources for that kind of thing. And I like the Padres hire of Andy Green. I liked the Diamondbacks hire of Chip Hale.
Yeah.
And I'll go off the cuff to end it. Not planned. But who'd you think? Who's an active player who you could think of being a good manager? Like, do you think AJ Pierzynski is too much of a red ass to be a manager? Could AJ get the job done? Who's a guy who you've even seen, even in the minor leagues, like a veteran minor leaguer, like Craig Albernaz, who could be a future big league manager?
What about somebody like Jose Molina?
Yeah,
can you see that? Interesting.
Yeah, I could see one of the Molinas.
Yeah, because
for sure,
Yadier, even way in the future, but Jose is at an age, and
I could definitely see that. Where?
How about you?
Yeah, well, first I like the bilingual aspect of those guys.
Sure.
You know, active player. I was just realizing as I was actually asking the question, I was like, oh, I don't know if I have an answer to this myself.
Yeah, you got to think catchers first.
That's where I'm trying to go. You know, it is interesting how you have a couple of these guys, like a John Farrell, who's a pitcher. I'd love to find out who's that pitcher who could manage. Honestly, the first guy who comes to mind is Dan Heron, who just retired, because he did hit in college. He played a long time with a lot of different teammates. He was a little unconventional. I also think he seems like he has a sense of humor. I can't imagine managing without a sense of humor, although most of these guys seem awfully serious. You know, maybe a little too serious. But that guy, and this is, I guess it'd be a better question just for somebody who's actually around the clubhouses all the time. It's just a thing I don't have a great feel for. I have never had that long clubhouse presence.
Dave Ross, isn't he brought up sometimes?
He's brought up all the time. That's a great call.
Yeah.
I would kind of almost hope we get him as a broadcaster instead, as a, you know, the game really needs a color, it's the color analyst. Right now, we're getting John Smoltz, who's the color analyst we need.
Yes.
I don't know if he's the color analyst that we want, but
I think he's, well,
he's good, but
I like him.
I do like him. I think he's an upgrade on what we've had previously. But the catcher who could be a future big league manager.
Russell Martin? Is he, do you think you see him?
I don't see him as a manager. Yeah, you know, I don't see it. You know,
really like, connect to the Canadian some team.
Oh, I don't know. You know the guy who I used to think who would do it, who's not doing it, is Dan Wilson. Yeah. I thought Dan Wilson was like a glue guy on a team of superstars. He had to know what made Ichiro and A-Rod and Griffey play with all those guys. Randy Johnson. He caught Jamie Moyer and he caught Randy Johnson. I mean, really, you know, he had to. I thought he was perfectly set up to be that kind of guy, but. Instead, it was the other Minnesota guy, Paul Molitor, instead of Minnesota Golden Gopher alum, Dan Wilson, who became a big league manager. Maybe Brent Gates is out there somewhere going to manage sometime. Just thinking of other Minnesota guys. Like Sal Perez, could you see Sal Perez doing it down the line? Or is he almost too gregarious to be a big league manager?
Interesting. Is there?
I can give you
a hint. Is there a Venezuelan? Ozzie Guillen.
I'll give you a hint. Here's one. Reds official told me last week that when Devin Mesoraco was hurt last year, that he's such a big BA fan that this was one of the reasons, but he's a Baseball America subscriber apparently and loves the draft. And because he was injured, he spent the draft week in the draft room with the Reds, breaking down video, reading scouting reports, and helping the Reds prepare for their draft.
Nobody.
So there's a guy who, as a catcher, who's lived his life in the game, didn't go to college. I can see Devin Mesoraco being a guy who gets into the game either in a front office or managerial aspect. I mean, but like, who's the next AJ Hinch? You know, that kind of guy? That's a tough call. The erudite player who played the big leagues, and AJ Hinch, clearly the great thing you have to say about AJ Hinch is that he's learned from his failures in the past, which is what a player is supposed to do. And he's also done as a field manager, for managing in the past, being a farm director and assistant GM. He's got a great resume right now. He's done so many things in the game.
Yeah.
And it seems like it really has helped him relate to players. He can relate as a player. He can relate from his failures as a manager. Now the success he's had as a manager. He clearly has bought into the analytics side with the Astros. That wound up being a great hire by Jeff Luhnow in Houston. So he might be a guy who could appear on that list 10 years from now. And Kevin Cash, I think, as well. It's kind of a similar story to A.J. Hinch. Florida State's not Stanford academically, but I'm not going to try to. But Kevin strikes me as a bright guy and a guy who could also make that happen in Tampa. Good stuff, though, Matt. I always enjoy having a podcast with you. We'll be back next week. I'm sure JJ will be back. And next week we might have to record a little bit earlier because of the National High School Invitational will be going on this time next week over in Cary. Matt, we might even draft you into covering some high school baseball next week. Watch out. You might get sucked into the NHSI. So for Matt Eddy, for our sponsor SeatGeek, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.